This is Kate from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com, and today I have a very special guest with us. Her name is Brianna, and she's a bilingual school psychologist in the San Francisco Bay Area. She facilitates educators and parents who are learning together about school psychology, special education, and supporting kids with diverse needs. You can find her on Instagram at educationallysite. Thank you, Brianna, for being here. And I found Brianna on Instagram at educationallysite, and she does just such a great job, I think, from a parent's point of view, of simplifying what her role is within a school system. And as I've said, parents are always curious about how do we work with the school system in a more positive way when we're all trying to get our child through school when they struggle with ADHD for this particular topic. Okay, so let's get started. I think when your child has ADHD, nobody puts their kid in the school system in the beginning thinking they have ADHD. And it usually kind of unfolds and gets discovered as the child is going through school. And so what is the role of a school psychologist in a public school system?
Yeah, so a school psychologist, as you mentioned in my video, has a lot of different roles. So specifically, if we're talking about the identification of a student with ADHD, the school psychologist is part of an evaluation team. And even before that, the school psychologist usually is involved with just supporting teachers in general with kids that are having some different needs that they need, that the teacher needs some support with. So even before we get to an evaluation part of the process, the teacher might say, hey, I'm having a little bit of trouble getting my student to focus on their work or to, you know, play with the other kids or, you know, any number of things. And there might be some school meetings just within the school about, you know, giving suggestions. So the school psychologist can help with that. We have training in behavior. We have training in social emotional learning. And so we have a variety of different suggestions and we can come observe and kind of help the teacher. If we're at the point where we're thinking, maybe this is ADHD, maybe this student requires a higher level of services, maybe special education, then the school psychologist is part of an evaluation team. And so that evaluation team, it's a formal process. We would get the parents' permission for this. We wouldn't do any evaluation before, you know, talking to the parents and seeing if the parents agree to that. And then it's just an investigation of, does the student have a disability? Is it impacting their education? And do they require special education services? And so okay. We partner with the family the whole time through that process. You should be hearing from the school psychologist. Maybe they'll give you some surveys to fill out. They'll ask you questions about your child at home and at school. And then you'll have a meeting, which we call an IEP, an individualized education plan meeting, where we discuss the results of the evaluation and determine and whether or not they are eligible.
Okay. And so does every ADHD child qualify for an IEP?
So that is a really good question. I forgot to mention that there is many different ways that you can support a child with ADHD if they have a formal diagnosis or not, or if they're just exhibiting some behaviors associated with ADHD. So it could be really informal by just coming up with stuff in the classroom with teachers and at home, and we just talk about it. It could be a 504 plan. I don't know if you want me to go into a little
bit. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So I always get the questions from parents that are, you know, looking on the internet or they've heard through their friends, 504 plan versus an IEP, which one is better? And my answer is always that it's not about which one is better. There, one is might be better for your kid than the other. So a 504 plan is for, so there's general education, which all students are a part of, and then there's special education where the students still are general education students too, but they also have special education services. So a 504 plan is strictly special or general education students. So it is for accommodation, so different supports, and it is a legal document, just how an IEP is. And so all of the things written in it are the school is legally obligated to provide for your child. But these are more what we call accommodations. So they're just changes in the environment, changes with how the student is evaluated, changes to the supports you're providing in class, things like that. So it wouldn't be specialized instruction. So that is why some people say an IEP is better, but that's not the case, because maybe a 504 plan is better for your child because they can have ADHD and be totally able to function in class with their general education peers all day, as long as they're getting some supports.
Okay. What so is extra time, taking extra time on test?
That could
is
be
that, is that a 504?
Yes. I mean, and okay. It can be an IEP. So IEPs also have accommodations too, but they also have additional things. They have the specialized instruction in whatever area too. So a 504 plan, I've had plenty of, and again, also, you know, I have many friends and family members too that have ADHD that didn't have a 504 or an IEP. So just because you have ADHD doesn't mean you need either of those things. Especially if you're in really great communication with your teacher and your teacher is a good teacher, your school is a good supportive school, and you're just like, hey, this is what I know about my child. These are things that would help them. And then it can be a more informal thing, but go ahead.
Yeah, no. So here's my question. So ADHD is considered a medical condition. So would a parent, they probably are talking to their pediatrician as well, if they think their child might have ADHD, to kind of explore the medical side of that. So if they get, can a child get a 504 if they don't have a medical diagnosis?
It is different in different states. So that's one of the things I've been learning now that I have a Instagram page, is because, you know, it's not just Californians that are following the page, as people from all over. So I'm very careful not to make blanket statements about everywhere, because I do think in some states they do require a medical diagnosis. So that is something that I would ask, you know, the school and find out about. I don't think it hurts to have one. The school is always obligated to consider medical diagnoses, and it is helpful when you're making a case for if they are eligible for a 504 plan or an IEP, if you have that documentation. So if you have that, absolutely provide it to the school. But in my training, it's actually an equity issue if you require a medical diagnosis before a student can get services, because some students don't have access to a doctor that can diagnose them with something. And so if you're prohibiting them from getting any sort of support without a diagnosis, that's, you know, really an equity issue for that child. So I don't know how other states do it, but in my experience, it's always been, you know, it helps and it's great to have, but it is not required.
Okay. And so my next question is, would a parent call the school psychologist, or should the parent go to the teacher first?
I would always, you know, I always suggest that you talk to your teacher first. I think that is your closest relationship, and the person that knows your child best on a school campus. I think that, you know, it's good to work with them and see what they're seeing, if they're saying the same things, if they have the same concerns. You can work out kind of sharing with them what you're seeing at home and asking them if that's what they're seeing at school. So I always suggest that parents work with their teachers first and foremost, and then, you know, the process can go from there. Every school has a different process. Sometimes it involves like a meeting first with the team to say, you know, are there any interventions on the school campus that we can do to see if that, you know, will help them be more successful? Because I do think, like, we want kids to be in their class with their peers doing, you know, things as much as they can handle in like the typical setting. And then only when their needs are more than what can be given, like accommodated for in the typical setting is when we are trying to pull them out for groups or, you know, see if they need special education services. So the goal of mine and the goal of special education in general is always to have kids with their peers doing grade level work as much as they can handle.
Right.
Successfully.
Okay. And so do you work with the child? Like, let's say behavior is the problem in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Does a school psychologist work with the child
they
on
can,
behavior?
Yeah, okay. It depends. So I've worked in schools that have, you know, a lot of different staff members and schools that are very bare bones about who they have on staff. And so the school psych role kind of, in my experience, kind of changes based off of who else is available. Okay. So in some schools where we didn't even have like a school counselor, the school psych would be doing a lot more counseling. I've had schools that have like a behavior support person. And so they're kind of the go-to for behavior support. And I take much more of a backseat on that. But so it kind of depends. And that's why, again, like, I think the relationship with your teacher is so important because they'll be able to give you more insight about like what's available. But the school psychologist can absolutely, in my role, I absolutely do work with behavior.
Yeah. Okay. So if a parent's trying to figure out the landscape of the school and the resources, they could reach out to possibly a school psychologist just to do some due diligence.
Yeah. And we're always, I think also, you know, if you wanted to reach out to the principal too, they're also good at like arranging meetings and you can request that the school psychologist is there. Yeah. And I just kind of exploring options together is we have, I don't know if you're familiar with like they call them student study teams or student success teams. A lot of the schools in California have them, but that's kind of where you'll usually get a principal, maybe the school psychologist, the teacher, a school counselor, if there's one there, and that's when and the parent, obviously too, we all meet together and kind of discuss what supports. So that's a really great system that I've seen in a lot of schools, for answering those questions that you might have about what is available.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been in those meetings, but they're very intimidating when you're the parent because you're like walking into an environment that you're not familiar with.
Yeah. Right?
So it's like, it can be overwhelming, which is why I'm glad we're doing this, because it's like an outsider walking into like a well-run machine, but it's not understood well on the parent side, if that makes sense.
I really appreciate you saying that too, because I think like at school, it's like you said, it's a machine, well-run machine. We're really used to it. I'm in those meetings all the time. So it's something that doesn't feel like it's a scary situation to me, but it is always good for us as the school team to remember that parents are sometimes coming in there feeling like on the spot or scared, or that they're coming in because they need to like defend their child or, you know, battle the school for what they need. And it sets up kind of a dynamic where we're not all feeling comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah. And we want everyone to feel comfortable so that we can do the best work we can for the child.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is just parents being empowered more on like understanding what the role is and all the different roles of school staff.
Totally.
And how they interact and can impact a child so that they can do better in school.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And that's why also I made my Instagram page too. And you read in my bio that it's, you know, educators and parents learning together, because that was a need that I really thought, because I would see on Instagram parents that were, you know, using their voices to advocate for parents and say, this is how you work with a school. And then you hear educators saying like, here's like, you know, what we do as educators. And I just felt like there was kind of a need for someone to bridge the two. And, you know, not because we're all on the side of the child. And I right. think that's something that people lose sight of sometimes. And that's what I really think we need, because we, like, you know, a parent is a child's first and longest and most fiercest advocate. And, you know, that's, I always say that and I believe it to the depths of my heart that like the parent is, you know, that's your baby. You would do anything for your child. And that is like the kind of passion and knowledge that we need to help for the team, you know?
Right.
And then the school, you know, I do think that like nobody gets into education for the money and the glory, you know, we love kids too. And we want to use our platform and our knowledge to help kids. And so it doesn't make any sense to me why it should be opposing sides, because we all want what's best for
exactly. Exactly. And I think from a parent's point of view, it's just because parents come in and out of this system and they see their child struggling, but they're not, you know, we all wish, right, we could have expertise when we have our children as a school psychologist, right? Because it would just help us do better with raising them and navigating school. But we don't all have that knowledge as parents. So it's like we learn as we go.
Yeah.
I feel like social media helps a lot with getting the word out and helping us all be more educated.
Yes. And I do love that. That's why I've made a point of connecting with parents on social media too, because I agree. It's like so needed for people to feel that connection and to, you know, get the information they need to help their child in a way that doesn't feel intimidating. Like, oh, this is only a page for educators, you know, complaining right. about parents or complaining about teachers or, you know, whatever. It yeah. has to be an environment where it's like, oh, we're all here to learn. We're all here to partner.
Yep. It's a great strategy and it's where we're going. Okay. So I did have a question. Do you work with you? Okay. And you've kind of explained this. You do work with the child's teacher. Mm-hmm. So if she's saying, Susie or Johnny's like driving me crazy and can't focus in the classroom, you may have strategies to help the teacher put in place to help them be more focused and pay attention in the classroom, right?
Yeah. So it could just start out as just like a consultation, like, oh, tell me what's going on. Let's see what you're doing so far, what's working, what's not working. And then, you know, we try as much as possible in schools to be very data driven. And so it might be like, try this for this many weeks. Let me know how it goes. Take this data. And then if it's working, amazing. If it's not, okay, let's try something else. So that's generally what those student study teams or student success teams are supposed to be for, is to put an intervention or put strategies in place and then meet back up later to say, how did it go? Let's review the data.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good to know. Okay. And then did we talk? Okay. So a parent should really, if their child's getting in trouble, like behavior problems or grades, go to the teacher or go to the principal first, probably first steps, right? And then the school psychologist may be looped in from there as next steps are provided.
Yeah. That's generally how it works.
Yeah. Okay. And I thought it would be helpful if you could just talk about like a couple strategies that could be put in place if a child with ADHD is struggling with behavior at school. Like, what should parents expect or kind of think of? Maybe they can brainstorm with the teacher that can help them. And when they have ADHD, most likely it's they're not able to sit still. The behavior would look like not being able to sit still. Maybe they're a hothead, or maybe they're spaced out. You know, those are kind of very stereotypical ADHD things, but those are behaviors that can probably drive the teacher crazy. And mm-hmm. it definitely are behaviors that affects the child's success in the classroom. Yeah. So what would be some recommendations on things that parents listening to this could maybe suggest to their teacher, or a parent could process a little bit and go, well, maybe this would help my kids so that they could be more well-behaved in the classroom?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Again, like what you described are, you know, different things. And so I would probably do different things for each of those. One of the things that you said with movement or, you know, having trouble sitting still, I always love the idea of flexible seating, where it's different places that you can sit around the room or different like types of seats, I guess. And so there's like, there has to be a system for it. It's not a free for all, but I know some kids really love it when there's like a stretchy band on their chair that they can kind of, I don't know if you know what I'm describing, but they can kind of kick at it a little bit. And so that's when you have that foot movement where you're like shaking your foot while you sit, that kind of helps with that. I've seen teachers that do like, you can get a clipboard and do your work on the carpet. And as long as you're doing your work, it doesn't really matter that you're like sitting or laying, as long as you can get it done on that clipboard. Or there's like bean bags or couches, or, you know, depending on what tools the teacher has, wiggle cushions. So I do think that helps with the movement. Also, some kids stand up when they work. I mean, I know adults do, and, you know, that might be something that the teacher has to be a little bit flexible with, but, I've seen it done beautifully where the teacher just explains to the kids, you know, we need to all do different things to get our needs met. And in your example, maybe Johnny needs to stand up when he works, and he's still working, but that gives him the chance to move, and his body needs more movement than some other people's bodies, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So definitely that. And then a lot of teachers do this now, which I love, is they'll have like brain breaks where they have like there's different like YouTube videos or Go Noodle or something like that, where, you know, in between activities, they do a little dance, or it's better with
you. Oh, that's great. Get a little movement in.
Yeah.
That's probably good for everybody.
Yeah. It's great for everybody. When I'm in there, like observing, sometimes I'll do it with them. Obviously the older the kids get, the less they're going to want to do something like that. But I was actually on my Instagram the other day talking about with a middle schooler, my assistant principal and I were working together to come up with a movement system for them, because in middle school, you can't do necessarily all the things you do in elementary school. So we have this pass we developed where all he does is get like a time and signature from his teacher, walks to the office, gets a time and the signature from the office, and then walks back. And so it's just this, the timing and the signature keeps him accountable for going to one place and the other, but that's a little movement break for him. That's, you know, age appropriate, where he gets to leave the classroom for a second. It's beneficial for him. It's beneficial for the teacher. And it, you know, it's only a couple minutes. So it's not like he's really missing that much instruction, and it could give him the break he needs to actually be able to focus after that.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's all movement stuff. For the kids that are, you know, a little more inattentive, I would say, you know, visuals are so important. I have done a system where there's like the teacher makes a point of writing it on the board. 1, 2, 3, here are the steps. All the kids can refer to it if they need it. And then even like a little short check-in with the teacher to say, okay, what are you going to do first? Or even with some kids, they need help with just getting started. And so like doing the start first. A lot of teachers use visual timers. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of time. So they'll be like, we have 10 minutes to do this. Like, and then, you know, reference that timer on the display.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So that really helps, especially for our kids that also get anxious that they're running out of time. It's like, okay, I can just look to see how I'm pacing. And even the teacher can give some guidance, like you should be around this number question when we get to this time, and, you know, learning how to pace yourself a little bit better that way. And
yeah, that's great.
So I just gave you a bunch of different ideas.
I know, that's so great. It's so helpful and just so insightful, right? It doesn't have to be hopeless, which it can feel like, I think, from the parent and from the child at times. Yeah, so that's great. Okay, so as we wrap up, what wisdom would you share with parents who are trying to get their ADHD kid through school in a positive way? What is the wisdom?
Yes. Okay. So this is, I actually had a book club over the summer, and I read this book with the book club, Lost at School by Dr. Ross Green. And it was all about behavior and how to support kids in school, especially kids that are having behavior problems. And he has this quote in the book that I live by now, is that kids do well if they can. And it's just such an important thing to remember that, you know, if they could do well, they would. And if they're not doing well, there's a reason for that. There's a skill deficit there. There's a need there. And it kind of helps you realize that, you know, they're not just being a jerk that's, you know, doesn't want to listen to you. There's some skills that they need. And so just reminding yourself of that kind of helps you take a step back and say, you know, they're just kids, you know, especially with executive functioning, that part of our brain doesn't develop until later. And you can't expect kids to be mini adults. They're not mini adults. They need to be explicitly taught how to do things, especially when it comes to organization and planning and, you know, doing their work and making goals.
Yeah. I love that. And that's true.
Yeah. You have to remind yourself a lot of that, you know, because you're thinking, you're expecting them to just know how to do stuff. Like, why are you not remembering your backpack? Why did you forget that? And it's like, they need to be taught.
Yeah, they need to be taught. And it takes a team effort from the parent and the teacher and possibly the school psychologist. It just takes a team effort around that child. Exactly. And they will get through, right? But it just takes work. It kind of just takes more work than a typical child.
Yeah. And the thing is that is what is so important, just to tie it all in with what we were talking about the relationship. It's like the parent holds a piece of that puzzle, a very, very important piece. The school holds a piece of that puzzle too. And the kid holds a piece of that puzzle. And so if we're just trying, you know, putting it all on the school to figure it out, or putting it all the kid to figure it out, or putting it all on the parent to figure it out, you're missing an essential piece of that team. And, you know, it might work out, it might not. But when we have all three of those pieces together, that's when I think like we can really do great things for a student.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brianna.
You're welcome.
This was so great.